This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of September 6th. I'm John Gibson, and with me late on a Sunday slash early Monday morning is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, we're back to the morning.
Yes, we are.
Temporarily.
Hopefully, but we might start recording on Sunday mornings or Saturday nights if this keeps up.
Well, it ain't going to keep up because the Olympics are over, and the Paralympics are over, and the sideshows on the sideshows are all packed up and left.
I bet you say that to all the guys.
Well, not all.
Good to know. All right. On this week's show, we've got a chat with Tyler Higgins of the Oryx Buffaloes. We're going to discuss the PL race, the CL race. Takumi Kuriyama of Seibu gets his 2000th hit. And we've got top performers of, let's call it, in a long time instead of the month. And Makun also throw. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay, well, I spoke to Tyler Higgins about a week ago, and he's a second-year reliever for the Oryx Buffaloes, who I was going to say first place Oryx Buffaloes, but that no longer applies, at least.
You don't know when people are going to listen to the show.
That's true. They've been in first place for most of the summer, and they're not.
Yeah, but, were they renting or buying? Yes.
Good question. I don't know the answer to that. But we talked about this, that, and the other. And he's going to spill about life on a COVID team and being teammates with some of his Japanese colleagues and so on and so forth, and different experiences and a bit on manager Satoshi Nakajima, which I wasn't really surprised, but in the sense that I was surprised, but not really surprised. I kind of expected what he was going to say, but I didn't anticipate the fervor. So okay. I think you'll enjoy. Let's have a listen. All right. Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Tyler Higgins of the Oryx Buffaloes. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, congratulations on staying healthy, one, because
it's been a road, I'll tell you that. It's been a tough road trying to make it through all this. I guess everything's a lot of firsts, with the corona quarantine over here. That was probably the most difficult thing I've ever had to do in my career. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I'm still having a little bit of effects of it right now. I mean, just this season as a whole has just been encompassed by all the stuff that I went through just to get over here and get playing, it's super difficult.
Right. I mean, you probably thought when you arrived last year that, now I've done all the hard work to get to Japan.
Yeah. No, wrong. Well, because I went, I did the 2-week isolation period. Uh-huh. When I first arrived. I arrived on January 16th. Uh-huh. I did the, went through the airport. That was quite the process, just getting off the plane and getting through. I don't know if you'd call it immigration or the, mm-hmm. with the border closure procedures, it was this big process. It took you like 2-3 hours just to get from the plane to get out of the airport. And then that day doesn't count towards your isolation. So the next morning starts your clock and you have to do 14 days. So I set up, I had a net in my apartment. I measured it out. It's actually 15 and a half feet from my back corner of my living room to this other corner. And I set up a training table and I put a big net on top of it with mattress behind it. And I was throwing into my living room. I was wearing tennis shoes because I have a wood floor.
Okay.
I actually messed up my floor pretty bad with my shoe marks, kind of like a basketball court, So I had to have them refinish my floor after I got done. And then I got out of quarantine for 5 days, and then I had that positive COVID test. And so I had to go back in for another 10 days.
Okay.
And that's what really screwed me up bad. Everybody's going through struggles. And some people just view it differently and whatnot. But for me, I don't have kids. I have a wife and three dogs at home. And I mean, for me, we actually bought a house I own a house. I've never been in it. So I walked the property. I went inside once before we owned it. When we were looking at it, we made an offer. We closed on it while I was here, and I've never actually been in it since we've owned it.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it's difficult. I mean, there's a lot of things we're missing out on, and there's a lot of things that are hard to understand, as a foreigner here, specifically playing baseball here, and the things that have gone on and that have been allowed are a little confusing and kind of difficult to accept. But everybody's working through it in different ways, and some guys just needed to go home. As a foreigner over here without your family, it crosses your mind every day, to be honest. It's like, is today the day I'm just going to go home? Like I try to compare it to things that other people have gone through, but you can't, it's not like you're over here on, a work trip where, your rest of your company is here or whatever. You're here with about, I'll say, 6 to 7 people that speak your language.
Right.
So in those 6 to 7 people, 3 of them are, translators. So they, they're essentially working for your team. And then, for me, lucky for me, just now we signed 2 new guys that both speak English, Vargas and Sparkman.
Right.
And I've actually didn't know this until we signed him, but I actually played on the same team as Vargas in winter ball in 2018, the winter of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
I knew him a little bit once he actually got here and I saw him. But I was lucky enough to have those guys here that speak English. But I mean, it's other than that, when you're because of COVID rules, then, you're speaking to those 6 or 7 people for, let's say you're at the field for 6-7 hours, and then you go home. Well, when you go home, like you're alone, and like when I say alone, like you're literally in solitary, in your, because of the COVID rules. So it's very difficult. I mean, it's there's a lot of problems that people are going to have for a long time after this. The people that stuck it out, here by themselves, like there's going to be some social interaction issues when they go home. I mean, going to be some, realistically, there's probably going to be some form of an adjustment period, maybe some therapy needed, whatever. But I mean, you're in silence, like the only thing you got is your phone. Like we've all been living off our phones. That's how we see our family.
Sure.
The only, English we see is here, or only language we hear is English is on our Fire Stick or, TV. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of sourness amongst some guys that probably won't come back. If they take it out this year, I don't see them really. I see a couple guys probably not coming back. I mean, there's already been 7 or 8 that have either retired or quit or left. So
In respect to that, has the team adjusted to how they've dealt with, because obviously you guys are islands.
If you had asked me these questions 5 years ago, I would have had completely probably different answers, but I like to say that I'm old enough to kind of step back and understand that I know it's not the team choosing to not allow our families here, and they don't know how to handle, they've never had to go through this stuff either. So everybody this year last year it was a little different, but everybody this year and last year have just, they're all going through, these are all firsts for everybody. This is the first for the NPB. This is a first for the foreign players to deal with this. This is the first for, COVID for the Japanese players. Like their lives are changing as well, or their lives have changed, and their normals have changed in the last right. 2 years as well. So everybody's going through things and having to choose how to handle things by the seat of your pants. So sometimes you're going to make those decisions wrong. Sometimes you're not going to get it right. That's okay. But the team, for what it's worth, I feel like most of these teams are trying to do what they can, you know, knowing that their hands are tied by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs or, you know, whatever it may be.
You know, the fighters told me it's like their immigration office said, no, you know, you guys can't do it the way you always do it.
Well, that goes back to how teams handled the end of the 2020 season. So a lot of teams told their guys to not fill out the reentry paperwork and allow the government to stamp their put a hole in their residence card. The Buffaloes chose to go. There was two ways to do it. That was right. one way. And a mass amount of teams chose to do it that way. And luckily, like a couple guys, they signed extensions before the year ended and they renewed their residence card. So they were good anyways. For us, with the Buffaloes, we filled out all of our reentry paperwork and we did not allow them to stamp the card. So we were allowed to come back in up until our residence card expired, which was January 27th or 6th. Okay. So we were good. Yeah, we were good to go to get over here. It wasn't an issue at all. But the new guys, you know, obviously you get that those guys can't come over till they came to that agreement on between the MPB and the government.
Okay. Let's talk about the team a bit. In other areas. Now you got a new manager last year.
Yep.
And it seemed like that, you know, from an outsider's point of view, it seemed like the team changed quite dramatically.
180 degree turn. Absolutely. Really? Yes. He's a great manager. I mean, I've only had two in Japan. In Japan, I've had, you know, quite a few in my day, but he is great for our organization where we are right now. He is really, really good with the young players. And he was managing the minor league team before. And I believe from kind of the rumor mill that I was hearing is they were kind of preparing him for that,
to
be the big league manager. They wanted him to, you know, to work his way up. And I think that the timing was right. And we had a lot of younger prospects that were right on the cusp of coming up, and they kind of started to come up with him. And he's just really, really good at letting guys kind of take the stress off themselves and be themselves. Cause I think a lot of the traditional Japanese culture of baseball puts a lot of a weight on these young prospect shoulders to do all these things perfectly. And they get kind of overwhelmed with it a little bit. And it just seems like he finds a way to, he just brings out the talent. I mean, the players have changed. The younger Japanese players have changed immensely since he came into the picture. I mean, it's drastic how different it is. Everybody's having fun. The atmosphere in the clubhouse, like not even regarding him, has changed everything about the organization almost. And since he took over halfway through last year, because obviously when you come in halfway through season, it's going to be difficult to flip the switch on everything. But like this year, it's just transformed into, it's great. I mean, it's way better than I could have imagined. I mean, some of these players are just, I mean, they're having great years. You can tell they're having fun. They're not stressed. They're being themselves. They're playing the game the way they want to play it. It's fantastic.
I mean, I look at some of the position players. I mean, I've always, Oryx has been a team where for the last 4 or 5 years, it had really good starting pitching. Mm-hmm. Even before they made Yamamoto a starter, they had pretty good starting pitching. And then everything else was just kind of a crapshoot. I mean, it was, they had good guy. I mean, Masataka Yoshida is an amazing player.
But he's the best in the MPB.
I mean, I just, what a wonderful player he has been. Yeah. but the rest of it was guys who seemed like, you know, they had the talent. And I see this with a lot of the pitchers. Some of the guys on your pitching staff have just the most amazing stuff, but they've been remarkably inconsistent.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched, man, what a slider and what a splitter and what a change this guy's got. And how come he's, you know, how come he's got an ERA of 5.5?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that inconsistency, you know, in the staff also comes with the inconsistency, you know, in the offense, because like if you're losing many games in a row or you're winning a bunch of games in a row, those guys that, you know, those bridge guys, those middle of the game guys don't get a lot of action. Mm-hmm. So that's when you know, or roles reverse, if you're losing a bunch of games, your back end guys, they don't get as much action. So it's like, that's where the inconsistency comes from. And it seems like right now we're just kind of firing on all cylinders and everything's, you know, we've had some pretty nasty injuries happen in the last couple of weeks. And guys are stepping up, guys are filling the holes, you know, and, you know, it's good. You know, like, I mean, if you just look at the difference between last year and this year, I mean, the three guys that stand out to me are Mooney, Fukuda, and Sugimoto. I mean, those guys are just those are the guys that have made a difference, that have changed the way that they're going about their game. And it's just been great for us.
Yeah, Fukuda, this is a guy he didn't have a job. He was sort of a middle substitute, middle infielder.
Yeah.
Small number two hitter, expected to go up and bunt. And now he's just a grinder.
You give him the chance to be himself and look at what he's doing. I mean, he's incredible. In our side of the league, I mean, I face them all. There's no better leadoff hitter than him right now, as it stands right now. And he's dangerous. Like, he gets on base and he's dangerous. Like, he can get on base many ways and it's very hard to pitch to him. He covers a lot of the plate. And he's not afraid to choke up and take a single. Like, he's not trying to do too much. He'll lay down he'll bunt. Like, he's a great leadoff hitter.
And is in the outfield, because when they put him in center field, I thought, wow, this is going to be, it's common in Japan to have these infielders, outfielders.
Yeah.
And I saw him misplay or misjudge a couple of balls earlier in the season, but I haven't seen that recently.
He works hard. He's out there all day trying to figure out his routes because it's new to him. You know, it's not something that just happens. Like, you know, it's a new position. It's everything's new. And he's doing well. He's pretty darn good out there.
Yeah. This is the thing. My impression of Oryx before was a team that was sort of like, every time they made a mistake, it was like, here we go again. And now when you guys make a mental error or a physical error, it's like, okay, you know, move on. We're still going to win. We're in this game.
Well, that's it. And that's another difference that you notice this year is like, if a bad thing happened last year in the fifth or sixth inning or third inning, like, it just kind of changed the mentality of the game for us, the feeling in the bullpen, the feeling in the dugout, at least from my view. And this year, like, you know, if I go out there and I don't do my job and I accept, you know, I make a mistake, you know, not everybody's perfect. Sometimes I make a mistake. I have a strong sense that, like, I know my team's going to pick me up. Mm-hmm. You know, this game's not over.
Right.
And you've seen it many times with the Buffalo. Like, we've won games in the eighth, the ninth inning. I mean, it's just this year, it's just so much different. And I mean, it's great. We're a good team. Like, we are winning some ball games and we are having fun and it's great. Everybody's, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because all the English writers, and I think the Japanese writers as well that I know, had this impression of the Buffaloes as a team of good, a bad team with good players.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's what guys this year are more laid back, just because they can be a little bit more like themselves. You know, they're comfortable with the manager and they're comfortable with everything. And I think that allows them to play their game the way they want to play it. You know,
how is this moving? How do you see this moving forward? Because these guys gotta, take the ball and move on to the next level within themselves.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think that the way things are going, And I really do think that the Buffaloes have the ability to sustain, you know, a high level of performance comparative to what maybe they were before the last few years. Like you mentioned, I wasn't here, but I'm aware of a little bit of the stuff that had happened. And I think that there's a significant chance that we can really continue to be a, you know, someone that's competitive in the top part of this league. Mm-hmm. And I think that the team is showing that they're, you know, willing to make things happen. I mean, obviously we had some tough injuries with the new sign Ravello. He broke his wrist. You know, the team's trying to put players in specific spots, you know, to bolster this team. You know, as it goes, you know, right now it hasn't quite worked out the way that the team probably hoped. Obviously, Ravello was going to be a big bat for us. And it's just the way it works. Tough injury. The team's doing what they can to they were doing what they can to try and, you know, really push this thing over the edge. And you like to see that. You know, they signed Sparkman to bring him into the starting staff, who we already had a pretty decent starting pitching.
Yeah.
We signed Vargas. He's into the pen. I think he can do a little bit of both start and relief, but right now he's in the pen and he's pretty good too. You know, and hopefully we can get Teokata back from his injury soon. Mm-hmm. He's a huge part of this team. You know, I do think that we're in a position now to really carry this over for a few years. I think the players we have in place, and even the young guys too, that we're, you know, giving chances to, and then they're learning and you know, I think we're doing it in the right way. I think we're doing it in the right spots, you know, to create guys to give them some confidence, but not, you know, not ruin confidence. And I think that it's a good situation. I really do.
When you're in practice and in meetings and it's like, what's, you know, when you go back to the States and next time you go back to the States and you're talking to people, your baseball people, and you're saying like, there's this guy in my team who, who are you talking about? You wouldn't believe this guy we got on the team.
Well, my favorite guy to like that I mess with, or we mess around a lot, is Rio, number 66, Yoshida Rio.
Okay.
The pitcher. Mm-hmm. I just thoroughly enjoy messing with him. My closest friend on the team is probably Yoshinobu. We talk all the time and he works on English with me, and we text online and we, you know, I try to help him out. He likes to enjoy, you know, tries to work on English and everything like that. And he's practicing a lot. But I would probably tell a lot of stories about Rio.
Can you share one?
No.
Okay. Okay. He's one of those guys.
I like messing with him. And then I enjoy our bullpen catcher, Ida. And I have enjoyed talking to Naomi-san, our pitching coach, pitcher, player coach.
Okay.
He's super smart. And he's been around a long time. He's played this game a long time.
Yeah, he's the oldest pitcher in NPB right now, I think.
Yeah, I mean he knows a lot. If you pitch that long in the game, you're doing something right. You know how to get some hitters out. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot to be learned from him.
Hey, well, thank you so much for your time, and good luck. Good luck, and
you.
Okay, thanks, Tyler. Hopefully, we'll catch up with you pretty soon.
Thank you so much, Tyler. This is the second time. I hope I get to
meet some of these people.
Yeah, I got to meet some of these people. Go to the field, and maybe I'll shout from the stands down, "Hi, I'm John Gibson from the podcast." Maybe that'll work.
Maybe. Okay. So, John, what'd you think about Mr. Higgins?
Well, it was a great interview, first of all, and besides him talking about Yoshinobu Yamamoto working on his English. So I know that just means that Yamamoto will be posted either this offseason or next. That's what I hear. But I'm listening to Tyler and I'm thinking, I'm recalling the story he told in the interview that you did with him last season, mm-hmm. about how he basically got off the boat, got off the train, and found himself in the middle of a game with the bases loaded at Zozo Marine Stadium. And, you know, he's such a good speaker. He's so thorough in how he answers the questions. And I just really dug the whole thing. But what I want to talk about, maybe if I can trim it down to three things, but maybe two things. Him setting up a throwing facility in his apartment about 15 feet, that just scares the living daylights out of me. And it brings me back to my childhood. You know, I guess we all did it, right? You get a Nerf ball or some soft thing and throw it up against the wall and you swing a little plastic bat in the house.
Yeah.
And you break stuff. Or I have to imagine that he was throwing actual baseballs, and even with a mattress and nets, one of those things could, you know, if he's letting it go, could hit the wrong thing and fly back and hit him. Who knows? I couldn't imagine what kind of contraption he had. So, you know, that didn't come to mind, but I just thought danger, Will Robinson, danger. But that's what we're going through. Everybody's going through this whole thing. And, it's not just the players. It's not just the public. It's not just the hospitals. It's not the frontline workers. It's just differing variations of stress. And I think you hear that. You hear that he even has a little bit of separation anxiety with, his wife and the dogs. And it's just, and then this house that he has never lived in or hasn't lived in yet. So, I mean, really, really informative stuff. And I did want to say this, though. I thought listening to his interview, thinking about the interview that you did with in the offseason that you did with Boomer Wells, the Zach Neale interview in which he was so emotional. I started thinking about all the interviews that we have had during this COVID period, and we really have had some really nice and very deep and compelling interviews with all these people. So I want to, again, thank them for coming on the show and being so open with us. And then thank you for doing this interview. And then hopefully the listeners are enjoying it. We don't know. I know I look at the numbers and I know that we're getting listenership, but we don't get enough feedback for me to feel confident. So, and we didn't get any feedback after this riveting interview that we had with Coco Ballantyne last week, very candid and riveting stuff. So anyway, getting back to Tyler. So I think, you know, he talked about needing some form of therapy after this is over. I think that goes for everybody. And I don't think it has to be professional therapy. I think it can mean anything from comfort food to, you know, being on the sofa in front of a professional. But whatever it is, it's we definitely are going to need something because life has really changed. And can you imagine the day now when you go out and no one's wearing a mask? You know, it's hard to imagine now because there's just got to be a pang of fear. You go on season, no one has a mask on. What is this? Is it safe here? You know? So I'm thinking we're all going to need some kind of therapy. And it was good for him to say that. And I guess lastly, I don't know if it's lastly, because I'm sure I'm going to comment on some of the things that you talked about, but we can see the results of the team on the field in terms of wins and losses. And I think you and I spoke about how the team looks like it's operating better under Nakajima, the manager. But for Tyler to come out and give us the inside story, break it down a little bit for us and say, hey, look, these young players aren't afraid to make mistakes. And you hear the tone in his voice when he says those words, when he utters those words. It's not like a lot of teams or a lot of people say these things. It's kind of cliche, right? Well, this new manager, everyone's free to do, you know, we've heard it before. But it seemed like when Tyler said it, there was such conviction in his voice. It was different. It was different. We get a lot of boilerplate, you know, cliche type comments on the show, and it can't be helped. But when he said these guys really work hard, you could hear him sweating along with the guys and looking up and saying, wow, that guy's really working hard. He's, you know, I really appreciate what he does in terms of working on his game so that he can help out and help us win games. So that, you know, that was, I mean, more than anything else that he said in particular, it was the tone and the manner in which he delivered the comments that really sold me on what's going on with the Buffaloes and why they're winning. And, you know, I believed in them before, obviously, but after hearing this interview, I'm sold. I'm buying in.
Well, I agree with you. And there were a couple of things that were left out of the interview just because it was a long and he said so many things. And I, you know, tried to condense it without adding extra things. But one of the things he mentioned was about how he did, as you heard, he talked about, you know, going stir crazy, being in solitary.
Right.
And, you know, I asked, you know, we know that some players went home during the Olympics, and Tyler keeps a really good track of what all the different teams are doing, you know, from talking to people and keeping up. He's best friends with Reed Garrett of the Lions and Scott McGuff of the Swallows.
Mm-hmm.
Pitchers Club, I suppose. And they sort of get, there's this feedback loop going around, you know, they talk to all the players and they talk to each other and their networks intersect. And so they know pretty much, you know, which teams are doing what.
Right.
It was so different than it used to be, back in the day before smartphone technology. But he was saying that the Buffaloes and the Fighters were the two teams that didn't permit players to go back to the States during the Olympic break.
Mm-hmm.
But that the Buffaloes, out of concern for their well-being, said, you know, take 2 weeks off. Don't come to practice. And Tyler said, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
2 weeks by myself in my apartment? Are you nuts? Are you mental? So he went to practice every day.
Yeah, I'm like, heck no, man. I got a chance to get out and go somewhere and run outside in the beautiful weather. You want me to stay home? How about you go home?
I try that one with my boss. Okay, so that was one of the interesting things that caught my attention, I guess, and also the detailed concern. I really, of course, I've been, I don't know what, picking at clues and trying to collect hints about what teams said about immigration and whatnot. And he just said, you know, this is how we did it. This is how other teams did it. And this is what happened. I was going, yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. But he told, you know, he talked about, you know, this guy had his family here and this guy has his family here, but the rest of us, and you know, he's really well connected, and it's like, he's sort of like the foreign players union steward. So that was fun. And of course the Yamamoto stuff, I don't remember at what point I said that didn't get on the interview. I said, well, he's going to need the English.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's what the first thing that popped into my head when he talked about, he likes to practice his English with me, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I know what that means.
Yeah, although I would disagree with you and think, I think there's pretty much no chance the Buffaloes are going to post a 22-year-old.
Oh, yeah, I think we're gonna see rumblings about it this offseason, that we're going to hear about it, especially if they do well, if they get to the Japan Series.
Well, that's possible.
Yeah, but then, yeah, maybe next season or next offseason that might be a serious thing. But yeah, 22, yeah, hold on, buddy. We need you.
And I guess, you know, there were many more things I wanted to ask, like the dynamic, you know, relievers and, you know, and the bullpen. And I got all kinds of, I don't know if this happens to you, but when you talk to a guy on a team, don't you sometimes say, now I know who else on the team I really want to talk to, whether it's a foreign player or a Japanese player?
Yeah, all the time that used to happen. But these days I'm like, well, I know who I'd love to talk to, but it's probably impossible. So I don't even let those thoughts enter because still having trouble getting. I mean, I have put in I was talking to one of the beat writers today who used to go out and cover the Giants. And I said, look, the Giants, just they're not even answering my emails. So what am I supposed to do? And he said, you want me to, you know, contact some people, give a push? I'm like, no, no, no. Cause then it'll seem like I'm the squeaky wheel. And you know what happens to Japan in Japan to the squeaky wheel? It gets
hammered down.
Gets replaced. Yeah. It doesn't get oil. It gets replaced.
The squeaky wheel gets hammered down, or the nail gets the grease, or one of those two aphorisms.
Yeah.
So it was interesting, but the reason I asked is because the Buffaloes were really good. A year ago, they sort of like didn't know what to do about it. But this time I was lucky because of the interviews I've tried to get this year, half of the people have moved on to other jobs in the team.
Okay.
And a third of the people have left the teams. So, but this time with the Buffaloes, I got the same guy and he speaks English, and I sent the fax, and it was like arranged in, I want to say 45 seconds, but it was maybe in 45 minutes.
Yeah. I have noticed that the Oryx Buffaloes are very gracious and very, prompt in responding to requests. So,
yeah. So I'm thinking,
they've got that part together.
Yeah, so I'm thinking I'm going to go, and one of the guys I want to talk to is Yoshihisa Hirano.
Yeah, that should be fun. Yeah,
because I never talked to him when he was in Japan. I've only talked to him in Arizona.
Yeah. Getting to the Japan series is going to be a different challenge for the Buffaloes. And if they, you know, I'm concerned, and you asked about, I thought you were going to ask about asking some different questions to a guy once, because you know how I do the interviews. I prepare all kinds of questions beforehand, but I was thinking it would be nice to hear from Tyler about the bullpen, because we see that as kind of a weakness for the Buffaloes. But I know you didn't have time because there was a 21-minute interview. So,
we didn't even scratch the surface. I think he's got more to give.
Well, we need to have him on again. So we got more to get.
Wow. Okay.
All right, so let's talk about the Pacific League races. So starting with the Hawks and the Buffaloes and their weekend series, and the Hawks ended up taking two out of the three games, and Yoshinobu Yamamoto, the aforementioned ace of the Buffaloes, was the only win the Buffaloes could manage in that series, and he barely escaped. He gave up a late run that tied the score, but the Buffaloes rallied and got that win. And then the Hawks just kind of took over the series. That was on Friday, and they took over the series and clubbed him pretty much yesterday, and then had Richard Sunagawa, and it was really nice. I don't know if you got to see any of that game.
I did. That was the game I was watching, man.
Okay, so yeah, he gets a sacrifice fly early on, and then in the fourth inning with the bases loaded, had an excellent at bat, if you ask me. He fouled off some pitches and then
fell behind
and then got a pitch he could drive, and boy, he just got behind the wheel and drove that sucker all over town. And hits a grand slam, and his parents are in the stands, and then later on in the seventh inning he hits a solo home run, and I'm pretty sure it was his mother that they showed.
His mother, crying. His father, and his grandfather were there.
Okay, well, anyway, very nice emotional day for the family, and he drives in six runs, and they win 12-4, and it's Richard Sunagawa Day, and you know, all these biracial players or mixed race players who get on the podium and speak, like Yuma Mune and Richard Sunagawa and the others. It's so amazing because I always find myself trying to compare my Japanese to them. I'm like, wait a second, you know, this guy didn't just get here 10 years ago or something like that. He's been here all his life. He went to school. Stop it, John. You can't speak that well. But what a really fun game for him, and a nice bounce back, so to speak, for the Hawks, because it looked like they were kind of floundering to me, and that they needed some kind of boost. And of course, I always say Alfredo Despaña and these other guys, they come back, and like I said, it's the raid on the roaches kind of situation where they look like they're on their backs and they look like they're dead, and you poke them and then bang, they start hitting you with timely hits that really hurt and score runs, and they end up beating you. And it looked like that's what happened on Saturday. Despaña got a hit, and I think they had an eight-run inning batted around. He had a hit there, but when Sunagawa got that grand slam today, it just said, hey, look, it just seemed like the Hawks were back in this thing. Like, they're not falling out. They're not going anywhere. You're not just going to beat him just because you have won or you've been leading for a long time. You've been leading the league or you've been at the top for a while.
I have to ask a question. Did the roaches in your childhood carry baseball bats?
No, there weren't roaches in my childhood. They were on TV.
Oh, okay. Just curious. I didn't have any in my childhood either, not at least until I was an adult. We didn't have.
If they were carrying little toothpicks that looked like baseball bats.
Okay.
Maybe I was scared. Maybe it was a dream or something. I don't know.
Okay, just curious about that. But yeah, it was good fun, and the for me the humor was, now talk about this in my blog a bit. So I'll just do a spoiler alert if you haven't read it. But one thing that struck me is that Richard, as he's registered name is Richard, and his full name is Richard Makoto Sunagawa O'Brien.
Okay.
And he seems a little uncomfortable being, you know, the public as a public speaker.
Mm.
And on Saturday when he had his first hit with the first team, they always ask the question whenever first and ball come up in the same sentence. The first thing you're supposed to say is, I'm giving it to my mom or I'm giving it to my parents.
Right.
And they, on Saturday, they said, you got the first ball. And he says, yeah, here it is.
And Settle down there, Rook. Although he's not really a rookie, right? He's a fourth year guy. So
no, he's a rookie. He was just, he just got his, first team contract, I think, last year. Okay. Anyway,
well, he's been in the organization. This is his fourth year in the
organization. Okay, so yeah, so it was really it was a fun game and lots going on. And Richard, he was, so after the Saturday in which he, you know, he did the hidden ball trick kind of thing. On Sunday, they asked him about the first home run ball. Did you get the ball? And he pulled it out again and said. And they asked him, you know, what do you want to say to your parents after you drove in six runs? He says, come to every game.
Yeah, again, I did have to check out after the game was over. So I wanted to stick around because I was sure he was going to be on the podium again. But that's a good one. Yeah, come to every game.
And the last note I'll mention, I don't think I mentioned this before I wrote it in the blog, is that his older brother, Joey O'Brien, is a pitcher in the Seattle Mariners organization. So Richard was drafted by the Hawks and his older brother was drafted by the Seattle Mariners.
Well, it's good to see Richard up here because I think I'm pretty sure Dennis Sarfati said it in a podcast interview and talked about how Richard was lifting the ceiling off the gym when they were working out. And we've been waiting to see him. Yep. On the first team do stuff. So when he hit that ball today, I had no doubt that it was going out of the park because of what Dennis had said before about him being so strong. So he didn't really have to hit it full to get it out. But I knew that park wasn't going to hold that thing. And as you see, if you saw the replays, that his reaction is just about as he takes two or three steps out of the batter's box and he's screaming. And I'm like, yeah, buddy, that's gone.
Too bad
the benches in the outfield can't duck.
Yeah, he almost hit the pepper robots in center field. He missed him. He needed about another 10, 12 feet to do that. But yeah, he's a very joyous player. And I'll tell you, he had a play on Saturday when he scored the go-ahead run in the win against Oryx. He was on second base on a very sharply hit one out single, I think it was, one out or no out single to center. And he didn't have a lot of leeway, but he read that thing perfectly and slid in safely. It was not a gimme that he was going to score, that any kind of runner was going to score on that play, but really heads up base running. So pretty much liking everything we're seeing from Richard Sunagawa, which is good.
Well, that's good. I mean, yeah.
We also had the other fun thing in that game, which was the six straight strikeouts by Carter Stewart Jr.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't realize that, but I was watching him throw. But he must have had, at work.
Yeah, he was blasting. I mean, he was throwing a lot. And then after the sixth strikeout, he walked a guy, and it kind of unraveled a bit, and he gave up a couple of runs. But he looked really good.
Yeah, I was just thinking, well, you know, this is that future that I was thinking about when I spoke to a Dragons official a long time ago and said, hey, why don't you guys bring over some young players, let them develop, and then either try to keep them here or let them go. But that's definitely what the – obviously, Sunagawa being born, I think, in Okinawa is his hometown, so they're not bringing him over, so to speak. But he is here, and he's young, and he's he can keep making contact. He's going to do some damage. But I was thinking before this whole series that the Hawks were in full scramble mode because we were seeing guys we hadn't seen before, including Richard, and we saw Seiji Uebayashi, who hadn't been in games in a while. But they seemed to put it together in this series, and it just said to me, maybe I'm not saying that the Buffaloes are not ready to win. I think they're ready to win, but that it's not going to be easy. There's still challenges along the way, along this path, and if they're going to win it, they're really going to have to win it. It's not like the teams are going to give it to them. And look, they stopped making a bunch of mistakes. We don't have to talk about them in that, the Buffaloes in that regard. But they do have to make plays, too. They have to get those hits. They have to get the outs. They have to make the pitches along the way to get it done.
Yeah, well, the Friday game, the Yamamoto victory, the second week in a row, we've had this great duel between Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Nick Martinez.
And a home run.
Pardon?
And a home run was the thing that was looking like it was going to beat Nick Martinez.
And what happened was the Hawks bullpen. I mean, they have the two teams right now, you know, the top four teams in the Pacific League, the Lotte Marines, the Rockton Eagles, the Oryx Buffaloes, and the Hawks. Two of those teams' closing situation is a mystery because of injuries. So the Eagles are missing their closer. Yuki Matsui is going to be out for a month. And there's no timetable on when Levon Moinello, I mean, I've heard his name mentioned, but I haven't seen anything concrete. And Yuito Mori, we don't know anything about his left arm injury. And now Shohei Iwasaki is out. So basically the guy who was filling in for the guy who was filling in, who was the guy who was filling in for the closer, is now gone.
Yeah.
And
yeah, like I said,
yeah, Hiroshi Kino looks good, but they need somebody in the eighth inning too.
Yeah, like I said, they looked like they were in full scramble mode before this series. I think they really are as we go down the stretch here, and we're already a week into September, and
you can still tell. Having questions. I mean, when you see Keizo Kawashima starting against a right-handed pitcher. You know there are issues because basically his job is left-handed pitcher killer.
Yep.
So when you see him starting against a right-hander, you know that, you know, there's some thinking going on.
Something wrong. All right. And the Marines, you know, they were marching along and they looked like they were going to have their struggles, let's put it that way, with the Nippon Ham Fighters at home. But they somehow won two out of three in that series. And lo and behold, as they wake up on Monday morning, by mere percentage points, right? They are in first place. And it's just so weird. It's so weird. They still, to me, don't have that lockdown pitcher, that shutdown pitcher in the rotation. They're piecing it together in the bullpen. But one guy, Chihaya Sasaki, a guy who was a really, when he came out, he was one of the draft picks who I think not everybody, but a lot of teams wanted. Then he kind of just disappeared into the darkness. He never really emerged in top first team play. And we started to see him a little bit more last season. And lo and behold, he's 8-0 out of the bullpen. Now, this is fifth year, and he was their first pick back in the draft in 2016. And he's having a great season. His ERA is a little bit over one, and he's one of the reasons that they are, like I said, they don't have that ace, but if they can get a lead, he's one of the guys who helps them hang on to the lead. So the bullpen, it's just a roller coaster ride, I think, for this team right now. And obviously, I picked this team. I picked it to win, pull the upset in the Pacific League, but I just don't have a lot of confidence. The offense was really rolling and has carried it through most of the season, but seems to have hit its struggles, or you know, they're on an upward climb right now. They're just struggling to score and consistently, but they're winning games. They get the pitching when they need it. They get some hits when they need them, and they're winning games. But in terms of being that championship looking team, if you ask me right now which team I thought had the best chance to win, I would say the Buffaloes.
The Marines are a little bit of the Oakland A's. They got that's kind of an Oakland A's vibe to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a jigsaw puzzle. You know, that's sort of like it's enough there that you can see the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be good enough. You know, if the competition is missing a piece or two, well, this one can win the contest.
Right.
The today's Sunday's game was I guess the image of that when they beat the Nippon Ham Fighters 2-1, and any Romero who'd been banging around in Mexico after a stint with the Chunichi Dragons a few years ago allows a run in seven innings, and then they bring out Yuki Kuniyoshi.
Yeah.
Who was discarded by the DeNA Bay Stars.
Well, he was traded. He wasn't totally discarded, but he wasn't.
He was discarded, yeah. He didn't have it. I did play for him this year, so that's not – he's not a total – I mean, you have to be – we do have to be careful with this once. One time I confused a guy who was sold with a guy who was released.
Mm.
And to Tepe Tsuchiya, the form who won a best nine with the Rockton Eagles after being a really outstanding farm guy for the Dragons, says, I was not released. They traded for me. Yeah, we know the Dragons got a bag of balls for you, but, you know.
And some peanuts. Don't forget the peanuts.
I won't forget the peanuts. So we have to be sensitive to that because it's a detail that, it means a lot to the players, you know, they weren't completely cut loose. Because if you're sure. released, it means pretty much nobody wants your contract. Nobody right. wants you at whatever you were getting paid before.
Right.
So yeah, it is interesting. The Eagles are missing right now. The Eagles are missing a lot. I mean, Hiroaki Shimauchi and Igor Imogi aren't missing a lot, but. Hideto Asamura is on the bench due to poor form.
Mm.
And with the Buffaloes, speaking of the injuries, Masataka Yoshida went down on
yeah.
Saturday. He had a hit in that game. It looked like it was Friday's game.
Friday,
he had a hit, a key hit in their comeback, their ninth inning win, and he came off limping.
Oh yes. Yeah.
So he's out, and he's clearly he's a tremendous hitter.
And Shuhei Fukuda took a pitch off of his left calf.
Oh.
And so yeah, that could be bad. So but everybody's got the injuries.
But the Eagles are missing Yuki Matsui, which is the other thing is Hideto Asamura is on the bench, and Yuki Matsui is in the rehabbing. So the Marines are saying, "Hey, that." Those couple of missing pieces are not looking so bad right now.
Yeah. Well, we got to move on, but yeah, we'll keep it. Obviously, we're watching this race, and I'm watching as many games as I can, and we're heavy into it. But the Eagles, I would say, are the team that I would say is the odd team out, even though they have the great pitching. But we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. All right, in the Central League. The Giants are the Giants. They're going to be the Giants in that they're going to be able to find, buy, make something, some of the talent work in whatever way. But they had a struggle they had a tussle down there, Koshien, this weekend where they had a couple games. It looked like they had control, and then they lost them. And then today they had a 6-0 lead that they couldn't hold on to and ending up in a tie. So they come out of the, instead of winning two games, they lost two, and they couldn't win the one that it looked like it was going to be a laugher. And so Thiago Vieira, the guy we have been praising so much, he had his struggles as well, had a stretch of a scoreless inning streak of 32 innings, was it?
Yeah, 32 games.
32 games, 32 appearances without allowing a run, and then gave up some runs to the Swallows on Thursday, gave up a home run to the Tigers on the next day, and then was it the next day? Was it Friday?
No, it was a Saturday.
It was Saturday? All right, so anyway, he's not having – yeah, everybody goes through a bad stretch, and he has had a really good stretch. And, yeah, Yusuke Oyama hit the 2-run home run off him on Saturday. I remember that now, to beat him a walk-off in the 9th inning. So, and for the Tigers, you know, they've been looking somewhat, I don't know, frail. Teruaki Sato, which I think is totally predictable for a rookie to have a bad stretch. But I was thinking, well, he had this all-star slash Olympic break, and it was you talked about the fact that they were going to have these teams working maybe perhaps harder than the players having worked the players, or the players were going to be working harder than they had if they were still playing regular season games. So maybe they just wore him out in that break period, but he's striking out a lot. I think I've seen reports about the most strikeouts for a rookie, blah, blah, blah. I would like to know how many games those rookies played those years and how many times they went to bat, but it's seen as it's September and he still has almost a month to improve on that strikeout record. I think it's safe to say he's going to strike out the most, and it's legit. But you know, the pitching has been not as it was in the first half. They're just having the struggles, and yet, you know, we wake up today on Monday and they're in first place still. So yeah, it's fun to watch. I hope they get their defense together. We did see Jeffrey Marte come back, and he was productive when he came back, but they're still not catching the ball. We've talked about that. So unless they're going to, you know, get some better defensive players in the games, they're going to make mistakes, and sometimes it's going to cost them, and sometimes it won't cost them if they're playing teams like the Dragons that can't really hit if you give them 4 or 5 outs. Then it won't be such a big deal. But if you put them up against some of the better teams, the better offenses, the Swallows, I think they're going to pay. So fun to watch for sure.
Yeah, but
I got no call here.
Pardon?
I've got no call in terms of, I mean, I picked the Giants to win, so I'm going to ride with that pick. But, you know, it could be, I could even see the Swallows making a jump if they get their pitching together somehow.
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, what happens when the Giants get around the 5th inning, because Tatsunori Hara is going through this phase where pretty much every bullpen decision, not every one, but pretty much every game, he does something weird. And, you know, I've talked about Hara until pretty much everybody's sick of hearing about it. But, you know, he's got that thing, you know, he learned under Nagashima's wing that, you know, to fly by your seat of your pants and go on your gut. And sometimes I think he needs a gut check.
Or a
colonoscopy or something.
Because, or a gut punch and say, hey, man, stop that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we've seen some weird stuff. And today, I didn't see it. I wasn't watching carefully. CC Mercedes was pitching okay. He had a big lead, and he went to the bullpen, and suddenly it was it was just like a horror movie.
It was like our friend Jim Neighbors used to say, surprise, surprise, surprise.
Indeed. So, that's the interesting thing. The Swallows played well. The Swallows, as I said, they burned Thiago Vieira in a tie game. They were tied 1-1, and Vieira had set his record streak against the Swallows in their 3-game series. And then in the finale, the Swallows scored against him in the 9th. And, Scott McGuff, who hadn't pitched in 5 days. You know, that's okay. Takatsu, what are you doing? I mean, you've got days off. Why hasn't this guy, like, why didn't you pitch him, like, so it wasn't the first time in 5 days? And he missed a pitch and it got hit. And then they bunted and there's a runner on second. And ring the bell, and the Japanese manager salivates and brings in his outfield.
Hashtag high heat.
And somebody hits the ball over the center fielder's head and we're tied.
Taro's dog. Yeah, it's
it's the Pavlov dog solution for Japanese baseball. But I was so annoyed with, you know, pretty much blamed it on him. So the Swallows, they had a great pitching performance from another great pitching performance from Masanori Ishikawa. What is it about the old guys this week?
I don't know. And especially him. I'm like, come on, man. Do you see? You're not sitting up there waiting for a fastball, are you? Because you're not going to get one.
They throw you fastballs into the slider. And he was, you know, he's just like, you know, come and get it, guys. Here it is. Come and get it. And he's just got. Really, to go up there with, you know, with about an 88 mile an hour fastball, but the slider and the change, it's just really artful when he's on. It's artful. So they've got the things going on, and I like the way the Swallows are going, and I actually do like what Takatsu is doing, other than sort of the, you know, the occasional I don't want to be embarrassed on Pro Yaku News if I don't bring in my outfield or anything. But other than that, I'm pretty good.
Yeah, the only thing I'm concerned about their pitching, and they lost this series to the Carp, and at times they looked like a team that's going to the playoffs, and at other times they look like the Dragons. They just couldn't get anything going offensively.
The thing about the Carp series, and at the end of the series, the DeNA BayStars are now completely alone in last place. They've been tied with the Carp for most of the last week. And the Carp won 2 out of 3 against the Swallows. And I guess the thing that I've been recording is that Seiya Suzuki now has more home runs in 17 games at Tokyo Dome this season than in 42 games at Mazda Stadium.
Yeah. Why is that, you say? Yeah.
Yeah. Josuke Kikuchi has almost half his home runs there, in the same number as he's hit at Mazda Stadium. He had a big day on Sunday, 4-for-4 with 4 RBIs. So, no, and Shogo Sakakura, who's just a wonderful player. So, you know, it's hard to watch the Carp when they get a good pitching performance. Their offense has come around, and Seiya Suzuki has had actually a marvelous summer. With the exception of the Olympics, it's been a marvelous summer.
With the exception, yeah, it's true.
But he got a gold medal, so there. Okay.
Yeah. You brought up the Carp, and I'm sorry, you brought up the BayStars and Dragons series, and I was thinking today as I was going home, I was thinking the Dragons and BayStars both scored 3 runs in the series, but it's not true. The Dragons scored 4 runs in the series. It just seemed like they only scored 3, but they outscored the BayStars 4-3 in the series, and they won 2 games.
And Kosuke Fukudome drove in the winning run in both of the wins.
Yeah, just amazing. So it's, you know, you can do a lot with a little.
Yeah, Kosuke Fukudome had quite a week because he had a big game against the Tigers, and then he had 2 big hits. And Yoshio Itoi, as long as we're on the topic of the old guys, Yoshio Itoi had 2 big pinch hits against the Giants, pair RBI doubles. So what a fun week it was! It's a shame that I had to do anything besides watch baseball.
I know that this, well, we don't have to worry about Olympic competition until February, so we got a little bit of a respite, and then we're back at it. But anyway, let's move along, make a 4-seam transition, and congratulations to Takumi Kuriyama of the Seibu Lions. He notched hit number 2,000 on Saturday at, I guess I would describe it as his second home. And why, you ask, Jim Allen?
Why, I ask, John Gibson?
Because a bunch of his former teammates were in the building. They were there at Rocksten Seimei Park Miyagi, and across the way.
All right.
He had Kazuhisa Makita is who he got the hit off of, and that was a former teammate with the Lions. It was a little hit, a little John McEnroe backhand, slicing backhand to left. And also on the field was Hideto Asamura, or in the dugout.
In the dugout, in the doghouse,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, and then Gijiro Sumitani was there. I mean, it was
right, family. Kazuhisa Ishii
is the manager across the way. They're former teammates. It's like, hey, brother.
Yeah.
So Kuriyama becomes the 54th player and the first Lions player to get all his hits with Seibu. So that was kind of amazing because I didn't know that. And he came in as in the same rookie class as Okawari-kun, Takeya Nakamura. So just really fun. And I'm glad he got – I mean, he didn't go chasing the record like Tomoaki Kanemoto did a long time ago. And he just kept knocking away and plugging away like he usually does. And the guy I've been following for years now, who used to do the Newell site, who relaunched it as something else, but it's still under the Newell site on my computer. So he did a breakdown of all Kuriyama's hits by direction. So hits, infield hits to third, shortstop, all around the infield, catcher and pitcher included, and then to all the outfield spots. So what I did, since I didn't want to give you guys something too numbery that's hard to consume via this platform, but basically I added up all the hits that he hit to left. So the doubles, the home runs, the triples, and the singles. And he had 640 hits to left, 568 hits to center, and 644 hits to right field, meaning basically, because I took out all the infield hits, I omitted all of those. Basically, is he hit 35% of his hits to left, 31 to center, and 35 to right. Isn't that amazing?
Yes. Not surprising, because we know that he's
the kind of guy.
This is a guy, well, you know, if you've got a big wide outfield to shoot for, and you're a guy who, you know, in his best years, he'd steal 15 bases and hit, you know, 13, 14 home runs and hit, you know, 35 doubles and 9 triple, you know, 5 or 6 triples and draw 70 walks, you know, and hit like 270. You know, he's going to like just sort of like spread it around.
Yeah. Jack of all trades, master of none on the baseball field.
Okay.
But just really good. And either they did an interview with him and he said, I don't drink alcohol. Doesn't he smoke? I think I saw him smoking in the back room before.
Well, he was a team captain. I think you're required to if you're a team captain on a Japanese baseball team. You got to set an example.
Right. Well, an example. He said he doesn't, you know, he takes care of his body. And and he's a classic effort guy who, you know, uses every facet of his ability. He uses his swing. He uses his smarts. He has the mental toughness. He always gives you a lot of effort. The compete level is really high. You're not going to beat him before he gets into the batter's box, right? He's going to have confidence and he's going to think that he can win. So you have to use all of your talents and all of your abilities to beat him, because if there's a weakness or you have any holes, he's going to find it.
Yeah, he's very well prepared. And as a reporter, I'll just say this is a guy who's always, you know, he's always very charming and friendly and easy to talk to. So yeah, couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Yep. And congratulations to him. And we did talk about last week the fact that I don't think he's a Hall of Fame guy, but he's certainly a Hall of Fame personality, and he's beloved by his teammates and just a great guy for baseball. So really happy for him.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Time for As the Pitch Turns. Masahiro Tanaka is somehow still 4-5 this season. He got hit a little bit on Friday. The team lost 8-4 to the Lions, and they rallied. The Lions did with 4 runs in the ninth to win the game.
Yeah.
But Tanaka was on his way to a quality start, but he came out for the 8th inning, and we know he doesn't come out in the middle of innings. So I knew even when he got into trouble, he wasn't going anywhere, and he ends up allowing a run.
2 runs, you know, and then wasn't it?
I'm
two
sorry.
Runs? Oh, it was a run in the eighth. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a run in eighth. So he was allowed to work out of it. He goes 8 innings, 4 runs allowed, 7 hits, a walk, 5 strikeouts. Not all that impressive, but then again, very impressive when you consider he had to get out of some trouble late. So, and he allowed another home run. It wasn't a thing of beauty this game for him, but the offense saved him from a loss, I thought. And that has
Scoring really 4 runs. Scoring 4 runs in the eighth really helped. but he was, his thing has been these like one bad inning for him, mm-hmm. and where the mistake compounds with a couple of really good swings. They got a couple of really good swings on, you know, decent pitches. I mean, there was really one mistake and things kind of unraveled, and then, you know, he put the cork back in it and moved on. But, you know, as I said, he wasn't getting the run support, and that last run proved to be the killer because the Eagles came back and scored 4 runs. I think
they scored 2 runs in the bottom of the eighth.
Yeah. They scored 2 runs in the bottom. Excuse me. So the Eagles came back and got him some run support, and he left. He was taken off the hook in was 4-4 when he left. So
yeah. So I just can't believe he can't. Remember, I keep harping on this, and I apologize, but when he went on that big winning streak, it is so difficult because you have to be on a team that scores runs to get the actual W's. And he's just stuck at 4-5. And it's just amazing. So I'm wondering, I think that next win is obviously that we've got one more month in the season. They might get to the playoffs. So all that stuff gets thrown out the window and nobody cares when you get into the postseason. But can you imagine him going into the postseason with a losing record? What the media is going to do? Oh my goodness, Maku with a losing record.
I don't think it's going to matter. Harp on
it. I think it's not going to matter in the overall real world, but the media will make a big deal about it for sure.
I don't know. He's been, I think he's been, as I said before, I think he's been hard put. Well, they haven't scored many runs behind him, and he's been pretty hard put on by the umpires, I think, who want to show him, you know, that almost like Mr. Big Guy, a major leaguer,
mm-hmm.
you know, we can treat you like a rookie too.
Well, they got to make the playoffs first for this to be a concern. But
yeah, it's not easy. I mean, it's not like the Central League where there's a clear, you know, playoff teams only category.
Yeah, like all you have to do is walk straight and you can get to the playoffs if you have a, you know, winning record.
No, they got tests in the Pacific League.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I see this as being a big deal, but okay. He's got a long way to go. All he has to do is win a couple games and then he's got a winning record and it's a completely different narrative. all right, making a two-seam transition. It's the top players of the month, and I say that as a question because it has been so long that I don't even remember it.
Well, at my age, that pretty much counts for everything. Wait, you told me that 5 minutes ago. That's too long ago. Get out of here. Okay. So, all right. So yeah. Japanese baseball took a month break for the Olympics. And so
the All-Star break and the Olympics, correct.
Right. So they sutured together the records from stapled together the records from August. Yeah. And they have as they typically do in March and April and October and November, and September and October, they have a player of the month for July and August. They have a player of the month for July and August.
They're Frankensteining it together. So yeah.
The batter of the month and the pitcher of the month.
All right. Well, I didn't, I my process. I've talked about it before and I tried to think of who are the guys who were somewhat hot before we went to the break. And then some of the guys who are hot coming out of the break. And yes, it's difficult. How did that work?
How'd that go for you?
it started out okay, and then I tried to look at some of the items, but no, it didn't go so well. So I think before, maybe after, I don't know, coming out of the break, I think Jose Osuna of the Yakult Swallows was kind of hot, and I think Kazuma Okamoto was kind of hot. But what did your numbers say?
Well, I think your wife's going to be more worried if you think Jose Osuna and Kazuma Okamoto are hot, but then
but Jim will be here all week as well.
Right. My guys, we're talking about the Central League batters of the months.
Correct.
My first pick is Seiya Suzuki.
The Carp, yeah.
That's right. He led both leagues in OPS and RBIs and tied for home runs with nine with the aforementioned Kazuma Okamoto. Led the Central League with 18 walks.
Okay. I'll go with that. What about pitcher? For pitcher, I had Yuya Yanagi of the Dragons.
Okay. In each of these categories, I picked two guys because it's almost like there's a guy who to me is the best choice and another guy who's the reasonable choice. So the number two batter in the Central League I have is Okamoto,
right?
Who could easily win it as well. And then the pitcher number one, I've got Daichi O'Sara, who went 4-0 with a 1.59 ERA.
Oh, it's just so hard to remember. Okay.
Well, I don't remember. I got a database because my memory is no good.
That's what I'm saying. It's hard for me to remember, but yeah.
And my number two, who's another good one, is Thiago Vieira. And I think he might win it because he had the long streak. He didn't allow a run in July or August, and he had a 0.58 whip.
Yep. Yep.
They might say, this guy pitches for the Carp. So who cares?
they're not finishing in the,
and I have a funny feeling they might say, well, we can't give both of the awards to the last two guys who play for the last place team. Yeah. That's so un-Japanese.
Gotcha. Okay, that doesn't make sense. All right, let's move over to the Pacific League. A guy I remember having a spurt of hits was Tomoya Mori of the Sable Lions.
My guys,
and another guy was Kyoto Fujiwara, the Lotte Marines, but I don't think he had that many home runs or anything, so he probably won't make the list.
My guy, number one, Kyoto Fujiwara.
Oh.
He led the PL and OPS. Hit five home runs, led NPB in doubles, tied for the Pacific League lead with five steals, hit .348, had a .439 on base percentage, and he slugged a .630.
See, my database brain works.
It did. My number two.
I did have Okamoto in there too, and you had him as your number two.
Yeah. So,
I was on the right track.
And number two I have is Yuki Inagita.
Okay. Is that always a good pick? So my pitcher for the Pacific League was the one and only Yoshinobu Yamamoto, but I can't remember if he had enough wins or not. And I think he went through a dry spell in terms of wins, but he had great numbers.
Yeah, my one and two are the Oryx guys. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, 4-0, 0.84 ERA.
And Mr. Miyagi.
And Mr. Miyagi, who has slowed down. You know, he was striking out a bunch of guys at the beginning of the season, but people sort of caught up to his act.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still, he's what he looks like? He looks like Masanori Ishikawa with a 94-mile-an-hour fastball.
With an actual fastball, yeah.
Yeah, because he's got the same attitude. I mean, he really doesn't care if his pitches are really good or mediocre or whatever. He's coming after you. He's going to challenge you in the strike zone and make you do stuff. He's not striking guys out anymore, but he's not walking them either, and he's given his fielders a chance to make the play. So I just love watching him, and he could also win it, but he won't because, I mean, this is no comparison, 2.12 ERA and compared to the peerless Yamamoto.
Yep. All right. And I just wanted to touch on this really quickly before we leave. The Dragons won a game today in honor of their fallen pitcher, Yusuke Kinoshita, who passed away early in August after just collapsing. And it was a beautiful tribute to him. They won the game 2-0 over the Bay Stars, and just a nice situation for that team. It's going through a lot. So it was a pretty emotional situation. I even saw emotion from Yota Kyoda, who got a double in the eighth inning and actually showed mm-hmm. some emotion like he has never done before on the field
wow.
that I've seen. So, you know, he punched at the air after getting this double, as he's on the ground at the bag at second base. So really nice moment for that team. And so,
credit to the Bay Stars. They all wrote Kinoshita's number on their caps. I saw a picture of Tyler Austin with 98 on his caps. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still a community. The whole baseball community is one, and they are all thinking about this this death and the Kinoshita family and everyone. So nice moment there. Let's get some more high heat going, guys. We didn't have any last week. We don't have any this week. Hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions by email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com. You can also go to the Facebook page. Leave us a note, comments, hints, things you want to hear, things you don't want to hear. It doesn't have to be a question. So, Jim, you have an event tomorrow?
Yeah, we got a surprise guest on live chat at 11 a.m. Japan time, 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. A former fighter and eagle and buffalo, Fernando Seguinol.
All right, Seggy. All right. Well, hey, Seggy.
I should say at Blue Wave as well. He played for the Blue Wave too. So he'll be joining us. He'll be joining on a live chat for all the JBallAllen.com members.
Okay, everyone. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.